Предоставляется слово Антону Видоклю, куратору манифеста 6. Вот на кураторская команда манифеста 6, которая пройдет с сентября по декабрь, 3 месяца будет под эту школу происходить. Кураторская команда издала книгу, сборник текстов, значит, и несколько текстов из этой книги мы перевели и поместили на наш сайт, который вы можете прочитать на русском языке или на английском на сайте, собственно, манифеста. Вот. Наш сайт – это artedu.ru, где располагаются эти тексты. Спасибо.
Здравствуйте. Вы знаете, я, наверное, буду говорить по-английски, потому что я уехал из Москвы в 1981 году, и мне немножко легче. Я бы думаю, что, может быть, для каких-то людей необходим микрофон, то есть наушники, потому что сейчас есть возможность записать. Okay. So one very important thing to start with is I'm not a curator, and in fact, I was invited or I was selected to be a co-curator of Manifesto 6. But in reality, I'm an artist, and I'm also a founder of an artist-run organization based in New York called Eflux. When this offer to make a proposal for Manifesto 6 sort of appeared in my office, I was a little bit perplexed because, again, through the simple fact that I'm not really a curator, I've never curated any exhibitions, etc., etc. And at first I almost started laughing and almost rejected this invitation. But then I thought that, you know, perhaps this is an interesting opportunity to really rethink and notion of large-scale exhibitions and large-scale international cultural events. And I have to a little bit maybe reply to Katya, in a sense, because she really outlined very essential problems with this whole process and with relational aesthetic and the issues of communication versus notion of knowledge production. But the reason why me and my colleagues, who are Maya Bordahabian, curator from Cairo, and Florian Waldvogel, a curator from Frankfurt, the reason why we came up with this notion of a school as a forum for Manifesto 6 really had to do very little with theoretical considerations or any sort of philosophical thoughts. It had to do directly with the reality of the situation, with the reality of the site, which was already chosen by that time, which is Cyprus, Nicosia. Nicosia is the last divided capital city, and Cyprus basically has been divided into a North Turkish side and a South Greek Cypriot side since 1974. It had a tremendously long history of various invasions, occupations, dominations, and really the independent period is relatively brief. They sort of became independent in 1957. As a result of all this colonial legacy, all the cultural institutions that we normally take for granted, such as an opera, an art academy, a museum of modern art, museum of contemporary art, even national public library, are largely non-existent. So when we considered this specific location, which, you know, and this sort of situation with the cultural organizations on the island, which is not only unique for Cyprus, but it's really symptomatic in the region because its situation is not so different in Lebanon and Beirut, in Syria, in Egypt. We thought that rather than doing a traditional biennial, which is ultimately a kind of a preview or a retrospective of new developments in contemporary art, it doesn't make sense to do it in the context where all the background for it does not exist, where there is not a developed commercial gallery sector, where there is not national cultural institutions that form the background for any sort of review of the new cultural practices. Instead, we decided that we would like to use the budget, the network of Manifesta, and the infrastructure of it to start an art school in Nicosia. And basically, a little bit about the structure of the school. It's a postgraduate program. It's not really a place for people that are just beginning to their art education. It's completely transdisciplinary. There are the selection of student participants was done through an open call for which we received close to 1,000 applications from all parts of the world. In the end, we selected approximately 89 people, some of whom will actually physically be in Nicosia for the duration of Manifesta, while others will actually participate via internet from the cities where they live in. They're not all artists. There are also performance artists, journalists, writers, filmmakers that are taking part in the school. I believe there is even one lawyer that applied that's particularly interested in certain theoretical issues that would like to work with one of our advisors. The school is divided into three departments, of which I run one. Each one of them is quite different from each other in terms of structure. For example, Florian Waldwickel's model is really based on a kind of a model of a virtual education, which relies largely on internet communication and working with people from other cities in the world around specific projects, a set of specific projects he's initiating in Nicosia. Mia Boldahab, which is structuring as a kind of a migrant school that doesn't have a specific space, that uses existing facilities of the city. So, for example, if her program needs to do a screening, they rent a movie theater for 2 hours. If they need to do a conference or a lecture, they will ask the university to lend them an auditorium. So it doesn't have one specific location. For me, it was very important to actually create a physical location, because one of the problems with Cyprus and Nicosia is, while there is a small cultural community of artists and writers and filmmakers, there is really not a place for them where they can go at all times of the week and see something interesting and meet each other, see some kind of a program. In other words, a gathering place that's always available. So for this reason, I found a very interesting building in the Turkish part of the city on the north side of Nicosia, which used to be a 19th century hotel, which is now vacant, which will become, in a sense, a kind of a cultural center and a residency program, and will host certain, let's say, resource sections, such as a library of art books, which essentially is a collection of books of Martha Rosler, which includes approximately 8,000 volumes on philosophy, theory, feminist studies, post-colonialism, but also art books and fiction, science fiction, and poetry, and different subjects. It will also include a video archive, which is based on Eflux Video Rental, which is a project that I started with Julieta Aranda a couple of years ago. It's basically a kind of a videotech, which is completely free, in which you can become a member and sort of rent or take for free single channel films and art videos home. It includes a collection of approximately 600 or maybe 650 video works selected in collaboration of approximately 50 curators from all over the world. And it probably represents works of about 260 or 270 contemporary artists. It will also, this building will also include, actually the participants of the program, majority of them will live in the building as well, because it really simplifies the housing problem, as the building was a hotel. So we're collaborating with an architect from Frankfurt, his name is Nicholas Hirsch, into really trying to understand the situation, how you can comfortably live and work in the same space, not individually, but as a group. And I don't know about orgiastic or sexual practices, but yes, we will discuss this later, perhaps. So that's the overall structure of this project. And of course, the incredible complexity of all of this is, as with all utopic plans, and I suppose the school, in a sense, could be perceived within this whole tradition of this utopic communes and all of that, you run into a kind of a physical reality problem, in the sense that, for example, the relationship between Bauhaus and the cities where it was located were often quite hostile. It was not particularly welcomed by the government. You know, we are sort of placed in an incredibly contested situation, and which is getting worse and worse politically between, you know, the two communities, the Greek Cypriot and Turkish Cypriot community. So the incredible complexity as this project is developing now is that it's becoming slowly hijacked by a kind of a political, overly politicized atmosphere on the island. And when in the beginning we felt that it would be completely inappropriate to take sides or to make any sort of comments or to host or invite projects that specifically comment on the local politics, in the end, in my experience, in this incredibly politicized situation, it is unavoidable that you're placed in this position. So at the moment, it's very complicated and very uncertain how we are going to actually realize this project with any degree of fairness to the communities that live in the city. So I think maybe this is enough of an introduction about Manifesto School, and maybe it would be interesting to actually answer concrete questions, if there are any from the audience.
I already asked the question. Who's getting money
with pain? Well, the money question is always, I mean, it's always in between something really vulgar, but then something really interesting. Who is getting money? Well, everybody who is participating is obviously paid for from the budget that Manifesto has. So the budget is very complex. Part of it comes from local funding sources, which is largely the government of the Republic of Cyprus. This is Greek Cypriot money. And this is also part of the complexity. The other part, it's about 40%, comes from various international funding organizations such as Ford Foundation, American Center Foundation, Mondrian Foundation, and other such entities. So, and the school does not charge money in any way. So
the students who will be there are not paying to you?
No, and it's very, very important to also underline that, you know, we are interested in the form of a school, and specifically in the form of a school, maybe in its relationship vis-à-vis market, and precisely what you were saying, that maybe university is one of the few places where certain kinds of resistance is possible. But resistance maybe not in an overtly political way, but let's say, once I was at a conference in Mexico with Boris Groys, which was the title of the conference was Resistance. And he was perhaps the most interesting speaker, as often. And he has a fascinating notion of how resistance is still, in a sense, possible in contemporary art because of a radical lack of hierarchy within evaluation of an art object, in the sense that in the end you could have a ready-made urinal be as valuable as a Mona Lisa, which is a kind of a time-consuming masterly work of art, right? So it's unlike any other process, any other social process in which an object or practice is valued. And maybe within that radical sort of difference lies there is the potential for resistance. So we also, for me, I think it was also quite interesting that if you look at the history of biennial exhibitions, at least in the last 20 years, even just looking at the titles of the shows, you realize that they perceive themselves as concrete social projects. And actually, if there is time, later I could read a list of, just as a joke, I compiled titles of the about, I don't know, 60 or 70 biennials from the past 20 years, and it's really incredible that they really see themselves as concrete social interventions. Of course, as an exhibition, they're always representations, right? So what I was looking for is for a more process-based formula where the relationship with the city, where the relationship with community could form over a period of time when you're forced into concrete interactions. Because if you work somewhere for 3 months, it's inevitable that you actually engage within the process, the business, the economy, all the sort of social processes on the site. So maybe this was one of the biggest sort of reasons why we adopted the model of a school. Also, there is a second aspect of it, and if you look at really interesting schools that are around right now, and by the way, I totally disagree with you about the crisis in art education. I think we live in a...
In Russia.
Because doing research for this project, I kind of realized very quickly that the history of art education is really an unwritten discipline. There is not one book, not one authoritative text that really has to do with global history of art education, at least within the modern period, since the end of 19th century on. And, you know, doing just minimal research, I quickly realized that art schools exerted unbelievably strong influence on the development of modern and contemporary art, which probably is much more significant than any single exhibition, market forces, biennials. And sometimes what is incredible is that the scale of the school can be absolutely minuscule, but the way the information from it disseminates has just an overwhelming impact on cultural production. But to return a little bit, what is interesting about school that it very naturally accommodates different activities within the same sort of institutional infrastructure, where, for example, Porticus has an exhibition program, Städtische, which is this German art school that I particularly like in Frankfurt, also has an institute for critical studies within the school itself, and then there is the educational part of it that actually has students, and all of that coexists and offers the city of Frankfurt an amazingly rich digest of cultural information. sometimes when biennials try to incorporate the discursive program, it always looks like this funny thing on the side, kind of like each art fair these days seems to want to have this kind of panels and discussions, but it always feels like an unimportant afterthought, you know, where the real business happens over there, you know, and then there is this also this thing on the side. So by adopting a model, a form of an art school, we wanted to try to reconcile all these different activities that most of biennial exhibitions tries to aim at, but, you know, within their representational structure have not been successful, able to synthesize successfully. So that's yes, a very long answer to the question about money.